Welcome to the Microsoft Spotlight podcast, where today's episode is sponsored by BitTitan. Please go to bittitan.com right now to see how they can migrate your data to the cloud. Andrew, would you like to introduce today's guest?
Yes, so I'd like to introduce another guest from Microsoft UK this time around. She has an interesting name, so I'm going to try and get it right first time. So it's Ioana Tanasi. She's based in the UK. And Ioana, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. You got it perfectly right, Andrew. It's Ioana. Super lovely to meet you and very, very, very happy to be with you today.
Awesome. So you want to just tell us a bit about yourself? Obviously, I just mentioned you work for Microsoft UK. So you want to go into a bit about what you're currently doing now, and then we'll go backwards and forwards to see what you know.
I was half joking because that before our conversation that I hate talking about myself. So this will be an interesting exercise. Absolutely. So I'm originally from Romania. That's the name with too many vowels for most people to pronounce. And I've been in the UK now for about 4 years in terms of living here. And I'm currently based in London. I've been with Microsoft for 11 years now, and one of the things I can tell you is time flies by, because I remember my first day, and it was 13th of December 2010, and I was basically fresh out of uni, or very fresh out of uni, knowing nothing, super excited to join Microsoft, which at the time was my dream company to join, but never in a million years would I have thought I stood a chance to actually join Microsoft, because the people I met from the company at the time were so smart, so passionate, so driven. And as a fresh graduate, you kind of think to yourself, I don't have a chance. These folks are like operating a whole different reality to me. So I still can't believe it, honestly, 11 years later. I've been doing a variety of roles. I started as an admin in the recruitment team, and then had a variety of recruiter roles based on different markets. And now, since October, I have moved into the accessibility team, and I'm responsible of I'm part of a team that is responsible of a program which is called AI for Accessibility, in which we support different organizations to actually develop products and technologies under the accessibility umbrella and powered by AI. So I work with those organizations over their lifetime with Microsoft, which is usually a year or more, in order to support them and make sure that what they're building is serving their clients and it's actually extrapolating the best out of the what they're trying to achieve. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
That's awesome. So there's a few things now I want to pick up on. Obviously, you said that you've always wanted Microsoft to come out of uni. Why that drive to join Microsoft and not another large IT provider or IT company?
I have to set the context, right? I was born in 88, and in Romania, the revolution was in 89. Technology started late 90s to kind of trickle down in terms of a consumer perspective in Romania. And I think I had my first computer when I was 14 or 15. And that was a big deal. Like being able to have a computer back then when you were 14 was a massive deal. And the computer ran Windows and it had the office suite. And for me at 14 and 15, that was the gateway to a whole new world. And growing up with Microsoft technology made me love the company and made me really associate that with everything that you have in terms of opportunities to, you know, productivity, to engaging others, to connecting with others. I remember the internet back then, it was through the phone and you had dial-up and you had to beep, 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 beep. And my parents would know when they were not home, when they were trying to call and I was on the internet because the phone didn't work and it's like it had a busy line.
The good old days,
good old days, and Merrick and all of that. So that's what I grew up with. And Microsoft was the company for that in Romania back in the day. And because of that experience and loving the products and knowing what the products, you know, built in terms of opportunity, I absolutely fell in love with the company. And then as a consequence of that, as I was meeting different recruiters at job fairs or just engaging with folks from Microsoft, I was constantly really impressed with them and how humble they were and how nice they were. And it just felt like a great company powered by great people.
You just took me back in like through time, just thinking about dial-up internet. Like when I was told, I remember I had to go to bed at like by 11 or something, and then I switched the computer on. The noise of the dial-up goes off, and my mum and dad shouting at me to get to bed.
Yep. So, I remember my first computer actually went out in smoke, and something happened that I managed to fry it. And it was the saddest day because I had no idea what I did wrong, but it somehow managed to fry it.
So I've got another question for you, following on to if you introduce yourself. Obviously, you spoke about your work in AI for accessibility. We actually had one of our guests on who's obviously working in that space. Elena, do you know Elena?
She works in Teams and in AI.
Yeah, she just does a big conference. So if you don't know her, I recommend you go and check her out or go listen to the episode about it. Okay. We can do an introduction. So just want to tell us a bit more about your role at Microsoft that you're currently doing today and with AI and accessibility.
So in terms of AI accessibility, I think accessibility in general is a very deep topic right now, and it's one of focus for a lot of companies. And I'll have to actually step back to explain why I moved to this space, first of all, and why I'm working in this space. Obviously, I've been in recruitment for 11 plus years. And I love recruitment because it gave me the opportunity to interact with amazing people, and it gave me the opportunity to hire amazing people. And then about, I think it was 2 years ago, I was diagnosed and found out I'm dyslexic. So for most of my adult life, I had no idea I was dyslexic. I didn't even know what dyslexia was, to be perfectly honest. I had this impression that it's that condition where like you can't really read or something like that. But I was really ignorant towards what dyslexia is. I had no literacy in terms of disability in general. And through my life partner, he's dyslexic, and he has known for most of his life that he's dyslexic. I discovered that I'm sharing a lot of traits, and I thought, hey, okay, so the spelling thing where I can't really spell or read my own typos, you have that as well? Yeah. Oh, or you know, words seem to kind of jump around the screen for you too. Yeah. So he pushed me to really get the proper diagnosis. And behold, I am dyslexic. And that triggered a lot of curiosity towards understanding disability in general. And I read every book I could get my hands on in terms of understanding not just dyslexia, but, you know, different types of disability, autism, in terms of either, you know, neurodiversity, disability from different folks with different backgrounds. And I found it to be such a fascinating, normal part of the human existence that we don't portray and we don't talk enough about it. And we don't have it represented in media enough or in, you know, day-to-day society. And I fell in love with disability because it is part of being human. Disability affects everybody through their lifetime, either themselves or somebody they know. So we are all going to experience disability in one way, shape, and form. And I was thinking to myself, right, cool. So we have this shared human condition. Why is it that a lot that we do is not accessible? And that's how I discovered accessibility and fell in love with technology as a way of empowering everybody. And I do mean everybody. And obviously, there are so many different elements to accessibility. It can be, we're talking of technology today, but it also has to do with like, how do we navigate streets? How do we get up a pair of stairs in a building? There are so many things. And that's why I said, wow, this is something that I'm going to do for the rest of my life. As quirky or cheesy as that, you know, might seem, I know that this is my passion for the rest of my life, because it's so important for me to have technology that is accessible for all. So that's why I said I have to go into this and I have to do this. And I was lucky enough that innovation team or the AI for accessibility team was hiring. And their role was to look after the different grantees that they have and to support them. And I had a real imposter moment in terms of like, oh, can I do this? I'm coming from a recruitment role. Will I be able to actually bring value to this team? And my mentor at the time said, well, take a step back. What are the skills that are needed? You need to be good at relationships in terms of managing these folks and discussing with them on a day-to-day basis. You need to obviously have the passion, and you need to be able to form connections where people trust you. How is that different from skills that you would have as a recruiter? And it was such an important moment to me, because if it wasn't for my mentor, I wouldn't have applied. I honestly would have not applied, because I would have not believed in myself that I can do it. So I'm kind of going on a tangent from your question, Andrew, but chain of thought led me.
I took about three or four questions from what you've said, so it's good.
But yeah, so my role is basically engaging with the different grantees that we have. At the moment, for example, I'm working on a Black Force for December under the employment umbrella and showcasing some of the grantees that we have who do work under employment and supporting employment for people with disability in different functions. And one of the things that I will be responsible of is telling their stories, because I almost feel there's so much work being done in accessibility, but sometimes they tend to be kind of hidden stories you need to kind of find. And one of the things that are very important to me is how can I tell these stories? Because more people should know them and more people should be aware that disability and accessibility are topics of importance and are normal topics that we should be talking a lot more about.
I think there's quite a few people in the community now that obviously are talking about disabilities more. I know when I was at the SEFCO Summit, obviously Donna was there. She did her session about disabilities and all that kind of stuff. And there's another guy as well. I can't remember his name. His name eludes me, but I know he's basically done a lot of talks in the past about mental health, disabilities, and
Mike.
Diversity. Yeah, Mike. Yeah, Mike. Is it Mike Hartley?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I know he's done obviously a lot of talks about that, and obviously he's quite driven and passionate around that as well. So yeah, I think it's something that isn't talked about enough, but obviously I think it is starting to get talked about. And obviously with people that obviously experience issues themselves, they are probably the best people to talk about it. So obviously you obviously joining this particular team, accessibility, you have that mindset straight away, obviously understanding another person's perspective. And I think for me, obviously I'll start this podcast now, back in March, February. And having spoken to a number of people on this podcast who've had ADHD, it made me seriously go and investigate my own self and obviously do a bit of obviously self-discovery. So I start, because obviously recognizing traits they had, and so I'm a bit like that as well, obviously it's helped me. And obviously I think with this podcast and other things I do outside of just general IT, it's kind of helping me more to understand and help other people.
No, that's so true. And it goes back to the point of representation matters, right? When we hear and learn from the shared experience of others, similar to you, you might say, oh, okay, I resonate with that. But if you don't have access or you don't have knowledge or you don't have the exposure to those things, you go on with life as you know it and you might not even be aware of it. I'm struggling here to kind of put into words what I feel, but I do feel very passionate about that. We need more representation of people with disability. And I'll give you an example. I'm very passionate about fashion. I do, outside of work, I do shoes. So creating shoes and craft is something that is really important to me. And obviously, through the lens of that, I do follow a little bit in terms of what's happening in the fashion world. And there's a lot I don't agree with in terms of the fashion world, but that's a conversation for another call. And I was looking at some of the runways that they had for their new collections. And you're starting to see a little bit more diversity in terms of the models. But what about people with disability? You know, where's the reflection of that in the runways? And that's just one example of where we need to represent the human condition in its full glory. And there's so much opportunity to do more of that, you know, in fashion, in movies, in TV shows, media. There's an opportunity everywhere.
I think Microsoft's going to bring out a fashion line soon with Donna doing the clothing and you doing the shoes.
You know what? I'm very sure there's more people in the company doing fashion.
It seems to be quite a nice second job as such for yourself and for Donna. I've got your website up now with it, actually. And one thing I noticed is the quote at the top, and it's... shoemaker on a mission to ban boredom one shoe at a time.
Well, this is a true story. I love shoes for as long as I can remember and longer than that. My mom told me that my first word was actually boot, the Romanian version of boot. So it wasn't mom or dad, it was boot. So I loved them my whole life. But during lockdown, I actually started making them, and I found that to be a real improvement to my mental health, because, you know, lockdown happened. We were suddenly inside closed spaces. Social contact wasn't what it used to be. I found myself actually working longer hours because it was easy just to kind of rock out of bed, grab your cup of coffee, be in front of the computer, finish late at night when you remember to eat. And I found myself in a place where my mental health wasn't great. And shoemaking started to be as a way to detox from my computer, because first of all, no technology around me, and, you know, from, it was a switch in terms of, I'm using my brain power a lot during my day job. At night, I can just like take a hammer and bang some nails in a shoe, and that's majorly therapeutic. So shoemaking for me started as a way of therapy, if you will. And obviously something I was passionate about in marrying the two. But yeah, I would recommend it to everybody. Do something manual, do something with your hands. It's, if you can, it's so important.
I've got a question for you. So tell us a little bit about Life V2, which is obviously your book.
So Life V2 was a long way in the making, in the sense of, I told you I moved from Romania to London, and this is going to be a very personal share. When I moved because my relationship at the time for eight years ended. And, you know, people grow apart. You can still have a lot of respect for your partner, but that's where life takes you. And when you start your relationship in your early 20s, by the time you're in your 30s, people do grow in different ways at times. So I was living in Romania with, you know, going from all I knew was being in a relationship for most of my adult life towards moving to London, a city that at the time didn't know much about. My bank account was completely empty, so I moved to a total of two suitcases and zero money in the account. And I was just restarting life in the sense of figuring out who I was as an individual, as opposed to Ioana, who has been in a relationship for 8 years and just knows myself through the lens of a partner. Rediscovering myself in a new city with new cultural norms, because there are cultural differences, obviously, between Romania and UK. And rediscovering myself in terms of challenges and what life throws at you. And Life V2 came as a result of me going through that process in terms of finding my way back to myself. And it came as a result of wanting to share with others who are going through that transition. And I think there's something that happens when you're kind of moving from 20s to 30s. I love my 30s way more than I love my 20s, I'll tell you that. And that's because I feel, when you're 20, you don't really know where you're heading in terms of, well, I didn't know where I was heading. It was kind of like this blur or a mess of like, oh, life, oh, career. I know things happened, versus I feel in my 30s, I know where I want to go, and I'm purposeful about getting there. And that's what Life V2 is about. It's about the journey of how do you find the road back to yourself, and how do you make the most of it in order to achieve what you want to achieve?
That's awesome. So, you know, obviously moving from one country to another is difficult at any time. And obviously, I think a few of our guests now, John, have jumped from one side of the pond to the other. Or...
Yeah, I'd say probably more than half. And, you know, your story is quite inspirational, really, because I don't think I could ever imagine moving to another country with nothing except for two suitcases. That's brave.
I didn't know any different at the time. You know, yes. It might seem brave, but at the time it was just going through the motions once again. And maybe ignorance is bliss, because I didn't know what I was kind of getting myself into. It just felt right, or it just felt like I needed a change. And it was my opportunity, because of everything crashing down again, you know, around me, to actually reset. And I remember that at the time a friend told me, you know, rock bottom is a solid foundation that you can really build on. And I reflect back on that even now, because it felt like rock bottom. Of course, it wasn't. It's dramatizing what I was going through. But it just gave me an opportunity to think, how do I want to rebuild myself? And I see that as a great opportunity I had. And maybe without it, I wouldn't be the same person I am today. So I'm really, really thankful for the whole experience.
So you was working for Microsoft at that point, was you?
And yeah.
Did you switch from, like, I'm guessing Microsoft in Romania to London? Yeah.
Yeah. So at the time I was obviously employed by Microsoft Romania, and my manager, who was in the US, approved the move for me to move to the UK subsidiary. And that's because my role at the time was a global one. So I was doing MBA hiring for multiple, kind of like an account manager dedicated to certain MBA universities, and most of them were based in the UK. So from a business perspective, it actually made a lot of sense for me to be in London, which was a easier sell, so to say, to my manager, in terms of like, hey, do you mind switching me from Romania to the UK in like a month? Because and she was awesome in the sense of, she said, okay, there's a business reason, I'll do my best to support that. And she made it happen. In a month I was from Romania. Wow. I spoke with her in March, and end of April I was in London.
Oh wow. My next question was going to be is how were Microsoft supportive around the move? And I'm guessing they really were.
They were supported in the sense of, hey, we're setting you up in the UK. How you get there, it's on your own. Because to be fair, I was the one driving the move, right? It wasn't Microsoft relocating me. So no, I had a lot of support, and I had a lot of support outside of, let's just say, financials, but I had support in terms of connecting me with folks in the UK, you know, helping me become part of the community. And there were colleagues in the UK who haven't met me, and they were helping me already in terms of like, right, the way you find a flat in the UK or in London is you go to this website, you do this, and then you get your NINO. And I was like, my what? National insurance number. And you go to this, like, you call this, and then you do that. People were incredible. Honestly, if it wasn't for the folks that helped me, I think I would have been lost for a lot longer.
So how is it different between being in Microsoft Romania to Microsoft UK? How's that vary? Is there any kind of differences, any kind of changes there?
Yeah, it's really different. First of all, there's a lot more international community in Microsoft UK. So you have more folks like myself who are expats. And if you go to the Romanian office, I would say it's a lot less expats. It's not to say that there's none, but it's a different dynamic, right? So culturally, I was going from working predominantly, let's say, Romanian culture to a very international one. And that, I think, made me grow as a person, because I was seeing things through a very monocultural lens, and suddenly I had to figure out of like, wow, okay, we're different because of our cultures. And these are the things that in my culture are not offensive, and in another culture they might be extremely offensive. So I think it taught me diversity for in a real way for the first time. And it taught me that things that I take as the norm are not the norm. And that was really beautiful, because when you get exposure to that, you realize how much there is to learn from other people and from other cultures. Awesome. And obviously the size of the office is, well, now I don't know anymore, but in Romania, it was a smaller subsidiary than it was in the UK. So just in terms of the amount of folks were working for the different subsidiaries was different. And I say that because I know they've been hiring massively, so I don't know the size of the subsidiary in Romania anymore.
Awesome. So obviously you touched on obviously being obviously dyslexic and obviously that hidden diversity and neurodiversity, that's the word. I'm getting it wrong there, even I'm obviously part of that. So day to day, how does it affect you? Because obviously in a role that you're currently doing, obviously there's a lot of communication, a lot of emails. Yeah. So how do you basically, you know, work with your dyslexia and obviously still be coming across in a professional way?
And I'll go back in order to go to the present. One of the things that I used to do a lot of and continue to do now, obviously, a lot of my writing has an incredible amount of typos. And when I write, I do not perceive those typos. So if I were to reread my email, even 10 times, I would read it like I intended it to be, but the way it's on the screen is not how I intended it to be. It will have lots of typos. And it can be small things like a missing letter or, the wrong letter. Or it can be that at times I'm actually missing one or two words. So my writing has that sort of character to it. And in the past, I remember folks were telling me, it's like, it's not really professional. It's not okay. Read your emails before you send them. And I was like, but I do. I do not see them. And I think after I discovered more of dyslexia, I just became okay with that, in the sense of like, hey, I can read this 50 times. It's not going to make a whiff of a difference. It's still going to have typos. And if that's the thing that people want to label as unprofessional, meh, I don't care anymore. I do have what I found helped is I put a disclaimer in my email signature now, and it says, I'm dyslexic. This email might contain typos or missing words. If you have questions, please reach out. As a way of not necessarily having to prompt every single time, and just having that medium in terms of sharing it. The other thing that manifests in my dyslexia is perception of numbers. So, and my partner makes fun of this. Obviously, he's dyslexic as well, so he makes fun of it in a caring way. And he says that I have an adorable way of reading numbers with the most confidence and yet managing to get them wrong every single time. So he finds it hilarious that the confidence of me stating a number and the actual number are so different. And I'll give, again, real life example. I'm ordering groceries online, right? And I might be ordering like 5 kilos of apples or whatever. What I think is 5 is usually double. It says 10, but in like what I saw is 5. So numbers are a big one that I usually mess up a lot. Reading tends to be better in the sense of I'm one of those dyslexic that do read quite a bit, and I have a fair speed at reading. But I do struggle with overly complex sentences. So for example, if there's a sentence that is overly long or complex, I get lost and I have to reread it a couple of times. My partner, on the other hand, his writing is better than mine, but his reading is a lot slower. So what happens is when we get an invoice or a bill or something, he's like, can you translate this for the both of us? So it's just picking your strengths in terms of who's the writer and who's the reader.
Awesome. So I've got another question for you. Obviously, what this podcast is all about, women in tech. Yeah. So what's the women in tech community like in Microsoft in the UK and Romania? Is there any kind of things that Romania do differently to the UK? Is there any kind of support there? Just trying to understand, you know, that whole background there.
Yeah. So again, there was a cultural lens to that, because And I was looking in terms of the diversity numbers, not just in technology, but in general, right? In terms of how many women in general are employment, what is employment looking like, not just in Microsoft or not just in technology, but as a whole. Romania, and what I found shocking at first, has better employment numbers for women than the UK. And I was wondering to myself, why is that? Why is it that I would have expected it to be the other way around, right? In terms of like, perhaps no. And then I realized, so until 89, Romania was a communist country, which meant everybody worked. It was equally bad for most people in terms of you all had a job. Even that job was prescribed by the state, whatever. It was a norm that both men and women worked. And as a result of that, even after the communist regime went down, you still saw that threat of women in the workplace. Now, with technology, there is a bit of a disbalance in terms of it's mostly male. And I was reflecting before this interview because in high school, my specialty was computer science. But when it was time for me to apply to uni, I didn't apply to a computer science university. And the major reason that I didn't apply was the fact it was associated as a male field. And I didn't feel comfortable as a woman going to a predominantly male field. So I went the business major route and found my way back to technology, but that's a different story. So there's definitely still that conception. Now, going back to your question, it's the community of women in Romania versus the community of women in the UK, I don't see major differences in the sense of, and maybe this is a privilege, but I always had amazing women around me who inspire and who support others. And not only do they support others, but they have a platform. And the platform that they're on, they actually lift others up. And I think I've saw this both in Romania and I saw it both in the UK. And actually I saw this in other, like working with female colleagues from other countries as well. I think there's more of a focus right now in terms of openly discussing those things as it was maybe 10 years ago. And one thing that I'm seeing more of, and I'm very happy, is it's not just women who are supporting women. It's folks like you, you know, John and Andrew. I really applaud what you're doing because you have a platform and you're using that platform to, you know, share about diversity and share about women in technology. And I think it's when you have people of all genders coming together and talking openly about these issues and supporting and using their platforms to lift others that you really get traction. So for me, you know, diversity in tech is not just a women issue or just a race issue or whatever issue. It's an all of us issue, same as disability.
Yeah, I think that's something that that Donna said in her keynote speech at the South Coast Summit was, and it's something you said earlier, was disabilities affect all of us. Accessibility issues affect all of us. It doesn't, I mean, I, as far as I'm aware, I don't have any type of accessibility or disability issues, but then I know people that have got family, have got friends and stuff. So I think that's quite quite a big takeaway from what you've said earlier and from what Donna said at the keynote. You said about having inspirational women. Who would you say is like the person out there who's inspired you the most?
It's actually my mom. It's not somebody I work with. It's my mom. If I were to go outside of the technology field, in technology, there are so many women that have helped me that I can't just choose one, because it's like picking your favorite whatever, your favorite cookie, your favorite pet. You can't do that. There's amazing women in Microsoft and outside of Microsoft in technology. You know, Ginny Leigh-Fleury, who leads accessibility for Microsoft, she's one of the reasons that I found the strength to open about my dyslexia, because she talks about her own disability. And by doing so, she provided a playing field where I felt safe to share my own disability. Donna Sarkar is somebody who I had the pleasure to meet, I think, 7 years ago. And she has she has such a strength and energy that is just infectious in the best way. And she's somebody I look at in terms of, you know, that drive and that ambition and just being genuine and being yourself in the world.
I honestly think she could run for like president, like Donna. Like.
Yeah, I would vote for her, no problem. I would be right there campaigning, vote for Donna. You know, I've had like in my previous job a skip manager that has empowered me through the years to be myself and, you know, be my best version. There's so many wonderful women out there, and not just women. You know, I would say again, it goes back to that platform. I had male managers who really were supportive and making sure that when it came to things like pay gap or things like the, you know, my own promotion in the company, they were extra supporting me in order to make sure that I'm on equal footing with my male colleagues. So it's, again, it's an us thing, all of us.
Yeah, I don't think I've said it before on a podcast, I don't think that if you have an inspiration, it doesn't have to be someone who you identify with, saying like, Donna in particular to me is like really struggle, like when you can see in the room when she speaks, people just stop and listen, and it doesn't matter if it's a subject that people aren't really interested in. Like people, I mean, day to day people might not be interested in accessibility, and it's fine, it's everyone's got their own prerogative, but then she stops, talks and people stop and listen and take note of what she says. And so I say, start calling her President Donna from now on. Like.
I think we need to make a T-shirt with Donna for president.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll see her again at the Scottish Summit. We'll have to do something, John, to take it up or something.
So the T-shirts need to be ready by then.
Yeah. By February, yeah. We've got to February's there.
But, you know, and back to your point, John, in terms of disability, and the reason I say it's an us issue, it's... We tend to think of disability, or I tended to think of disability as something that you have for your whole life, right? Like dyslexia, you're born with it, you have it for your whole life. And as I started thinking about disability, well, there's a lot of situational elements of disability. Like, for example, you can break your arm and you have it in like in a cast. That's disability as well. Yes, it might be removed in whatever months. Or, you know, my grandfather, as he ages, his hearing, he doesn't hear anymore. So he had to at first get a hearing aid. And now, you know, even that is not really working. That's a form of disability as well. He doesn't admit it and he yells at everybody about it, but it is a form of disability.
Yeah, that's the same.
And, you know, as we're getting older and as a society, we are getting older and we live longer than we used to. These are things we should be aware of because it might not impact us now, but it might impact us down the line. And technology is meant to help with that and make things better. And I think that's where technology companies have a real responsibility.
By the way, I didn't realize the time.
That's all good. We are doing good on the time. So obviously, you know, we're obviously trying to always keep our episodes about 45 minutes, and we're probably getting close to that. But obviously, we very much spoke about obviously your past, your present. So from what it sounds like, you're a person that's going to basically stay at Microsoft for as long as you possibly can. So that is your future. Both ends of it.
Well, you know, when I started 11 years ago, I didn't necessarily set out to be like here for 11 years, but I am, and I love it. I love it even more than 11 years ago, and that's testament to, I think, the transformation of the company as well, and the new leadership and the values, and I'm happy. And as long as I'm happy, and as long as I feel that the values of the company match my own, I'm definitely not planning on leaving, but it is very fundamental to me to be part of something I believe in and to be part of something that's driving a positive change in the world. And I know it's also very privileged to say that because I have the opportunity and the chance to be part of it. So I don't say it lightly, but definitely something that matters a great deal. And yes, I've just started on my accessibility journey and definitely been planning on staying this for as long as I can.
Is there like a a community within Microsoft around accessibility that people obviously get together and talk about it, are obviously not just a part of, you know, your particular department?
Yeah, so there's communities around disability. So we have employee resource groups, and we have a disability employee resource group. There's a global one, and then there's a country-based one. So I'm part of the global disability ERG. I'm part of the UK disability ERG. And part of those communities, accessibility is something that obviously is very much top of mind as well. And then there's folks that we have in different departments who are maybe accessibility champs. So they're basically advocates that have a passion for accessibility and want to share the goodness with their respective teams. So there is a community of those folks as well. The short answer is yes, in many different ways. The long answer is certain people do that on top of their jobs, or do that in terms of an alignment with their own passions, or they do that part of just through the lens of disability, and obviously the flip coin, which is accessibility.
Okay. Well, what I generally like to do to most of our guests is always put them on a bit of a back foot, obviously ask them kind of like an interview-style question.
Tell me.
So, obviously, you spoke how passionate you are about, you know, being obviously in Romania, always wanted to basically go and work for Microsoft. If you didn't work for Microsoft, what would you see yourself doing?
That's a brilliant question.
Making shoes now.
Don't know, you know. Hey, the road led me here, so I don't know if the road was different if I would still be making shoes.
Was there anything else that you wanted to basically do?
I think another option would have been teaching. I think teaching has been, my mom was a teacher, and through that I've always seen the effect that she had in terms of working with kids and how important it is to actually have great teachers. And I was lucky enough to always have amazing teachers when I was growing up and in my education. So I think if it wasn't meant to be the technology route, then teaching might have been a different route that would have come to be.
Awesome. Well, I must say, obviously, thank you for obviously sharing your story today with me and John. So it's always nice, obviously, to hear about, you know, more neurodiversity and how it affects people, especially in our industry, because, you know, it is getting more common. I think more people are getting diagnosed, and I think for whatever reason that is, maybe because of COVID, people have to spend more time at home and have to spend more time with themselves, actually looking at themselves. That's probably a catalyst for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm just going to say thank you for joining me and John today. John, I will catch you on the next episode, and we'll go from there. Thank you very much.
See you guys soon. Nice to meet you, Ayana.
Thanks for having me. And homework, just read something about disability or accessibility today. One thing.
Just one thing. Cool. Thank you very much. See you next time.
Take care. Bye.
Right, and I'll now switch off.
Thank you for listening to the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. Please make sure you hit that like, share, and subscribe button to help us promote our message. You can also follow us on Twitter at MSFT Spotlight, and we're also on LinkedIn, the Microsoft Spotlight Podcast. And finally, we'd like to tell you a little bit about BitTitan and thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
Remote migrations start here. Let MigrationWiz do the work for you. It's fast, secure, and 100% SaaS, which means you can migrate at any time and from anywhere. Migrate mailboxes, documents, public folders, personal archives, or even Microsoft Teams with just a few clicks. No special training needed, and no customer downtime. When the work matters, choose MigrationWiz.